SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201. Sports Zone 964, listening to Sirius XM online. And at our website, stevepick.com. It feels like a return to the more placid of racing news and coverage and handicapping and play and the like, right? There was a certain calm about it that was very welcome after, you know, the lead up and through Breeders' Cup and the Breeders' Cup postscript. Still, you know, there's still plenty to kind of absorb. In fact, we'll probably talk to Marcus this week, Marcus Hirsch, and I didn't see Marcus's post Breeders' Cup analysis, I guess, went up on Thursday or Wednesday night, maybe. I didn't see it till the weekend, but it was really good. He was kind of doing what Lonnie Goldfeder, and I missed those from Lonnie. I know Lonnie's doing a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff at DRF, but Lonnie used to have those great "What Was I Thinking?" which was such a great, you know, a great moniker for post-race analysis. And, you know, you say to yourself, what was I thinking? When you call your analysis that, you're sort of precluding that, you know, you made some miscues. And there's always going to be some. I know that part of our analysis will include the follow up on these cross countries. Am I banging my head against the wall? Saturday was kind of excruciating. There was a couple of, you know, some positive results within the sequence. And, you know, one of the fun things about those, you know, those multi-track, multi-race wagers is you look at some races you might not otherwise have looked at. And, you know, once you look at, you know, let's say there's two races at Churchill and three races at Aqueduct, once you look at two and three races at either venue, if you got an angle on one or more of the races, you know, suddenly it's worth looking on the front end and the back end, and, you know. So we did some of that and got by that beat in the nightcap at Aqueduct on Saturday was a little tough to swallow. I'm not exactly sure what the plan was with the caretaker. When I handicapped that race, the caretaker, to me, and granted, he was 2-1 favorite, but just, you know, looked like he was going to get the right trip and was going to get the right pace scenario and just, you know, really looked like the right horse. And ends up getting kind of wrangled to the back. I don't know what Lascano was, you know, it seemed like he was fighting him on the back stretch, wrangles him back and then comes with the run. And I knew it was over. We got the first single home, you know, and probably didn't need to spread as much in the stake where Therapist. Therapist gets up in the last jump, last, you know, waning stages of that Artie Schiller. Wow. Because he, you know, he didn't, midway on the stretch, down the stretch, you thought, all right, he's coming, but he's going to be too late. But nice job by Castellano to get up for Christophe Clement. And we'll talk to Mig. Mig's going to join us with his 10 o'clock visit. And got a bunch of things to talk about, Mick. I know he wants to talk about the piece that Eddie D wrote, Eddie Delahousse, with a view of the crop discussion that's really been hailed. I mean, the riders really around the country, the riders really appreciated Delahousse's view. And, well, I know Rich thought that he nailed it, and he'll talk about that. I know he's got some thoughts about what went on with Tis the Law during the week, and, you know, Manny Franco dismissal, as it were. So, Mig later. And, you know, as we look into the rest of the weekend action, a couple of stories, essentially, as we go through our usual introduction to recaps for the weekend, and that includes the sale and a couple of very notable passings in Kentucky. We'll get to that. But part of the story, I mean, the first graded stake, the only graded stake on Saturday, was that Mrs. Revere and the situation at Churchill, which is going to essentially table the turf racing until next week, at the least. No turf until the 22nd, at the very least. And that situation, of course, it took the Mrs. Revere off the grass, and, you know, everything that had been listed essentially in the condition book, basically just, you know, being interpreted as main track. So that's the way they've scheduled, and anything on the overnight, any extras on the main track. But that situation, you know, it's obviously a source of frustration for, you know, for people here as the turf season in the eastern half of the country starts to wind down. I mean, we obviously had a bunch of, you know, races off. We got a few in over the weekend in New York. The beauty of that double turf course at Aqueduct helps, at least in New York. But this has something to do more with the, you know, the growth and you know, all the things we talk about during the off season, or, you know, the end of the season, not off season, but the end of the season for turf at this time of year. You know, you just don't have, you know, we went through this at Keeneland even. I mean, after that rain, and then it just doesn't dry the way it does during, you know, the spring and summer, and even the early fall. So, you know, there's some of the things I saw, and Darren Rogers had a press release and talked a little bit about the, you know, the root system and, you know, the way the course is in the fall. So, this also very well, there was the sad contributing factor of winning impression. Who in that allowance on Thursday, and concerns about, you know, the way the course is, that contributed as well. So, sympathies out to Dallas and the West Point and Pearl Racing team, sesamoid fracture, and didn't get a chance, didn't have the details on Friday. But that, a contributing factor, in, you know, I suppose they'll evaluate later in the week. Meanwhile, when it came to the racing on Saturday and the Mrs. Revere, and we'll see what happens with the grading. 6 of the 7 horses stayed in. and only Hendy Woods came out. So, Princess Grace for Mike Stidham and the Moors, homebred for John and Susan Moore, Caracanti, out of A Silent Nightmare, Masquerade, and Princess Grace as the second choice with Laurent Giroux on the main track. And I know we were talking turf, but Marty had mentioned Pass the Plate and his brother's trainee for Silverton Hill was second in there. There were some notable performances. We'll feather it all in from Friday and as part of the coverage of the cross country. Nice maiden win on Friday. If you didn't see it, there was that Gagetown that had come up with, and we went over a few horses with Brad Cox the other day. Gagetown, the half to Include Betty, Exaggerator colt out of Betty Solutions, bred by SF, and Rupp Racing. First out winner, and did so nicely. And you got a decent price, too. You got over 5 to 1, $1,260 for Gagetown in there. Quite a few good allowance races, and some of the races that were included in the pick five sequences. So we'll get those in. A couple of other notable stakes. Obviously, what went on out west with the two-year-old stakes, and there was quite a few. There was quite a few two-year-old stakes, as there always are at this time of year. And Del Mar yesterday, you had the other graded stake of the weekend, the Bob Hope, the Desert Classic, the Bob Hope, and I watched this live. Tina and I are immersed in the Queen's Gambit, which is wonderful. We have one more episode, one or two. There's seven episodes, and I think we're through five. Because we decided to slow down. We watched like three on Friday night. And then I said, well, there's only seven, so we got to pace ourselves, kind of spread out. But it is terrific. And Dave, I don't know if you saw my tweet, but Dave Hill, I talked about that. Did I talk about this on Friday? Dave Hill wrote a profile and of the author, the late author, and of the, you know, the novel from what it, where, you know, from which it's adapted. So, Queen's Gambit. It's the opposite of the Tiger. Everybody's watching it, but it's not like the ridiculous Tiger thing. Red Flag at close to 11 to 1. The second longest shot on the board in the 6-horse field in this Bob Hope, and all the money went to Spielberg. Got down to 3 to 5. And Red Flag, a Tamar Coos colt for the Mosses. And the Mosses were on hand. I saw where John Sheriffs was thrilled that they were able to be there. And he trounced this field in the Bob Hope. One off by seven. I mean, the competitors kept falling away as they straightened for home. Now, this was very impressive. And so I've got to get John on. No fig yet, but, you know, this is a horse that broke its maiden at Santa Anita in October after debuting at Del Mar on the main track. It was interesting. And I'm going to want to talk to John about, you know, how he moved him around from the main track. He was in that Superman Shack maiden race at Del Mar, Labor Day weekend. And then breaks the maiden on the turf. And now back to the dirt and stretching out. And couldn't have looked better. Could not have looked better. And you'd have to think that after the grade three win, they'll look to the futurity. And, you know, I saw where Jay did the recap, and he made the interesting note, and I had not noticed this until Jay brought it up, but usually the Starlet and the Futurity at Los Al, usually they're together. Usually they're on the same card. They are not on the same card this year. And the Starlet, in the usual, you know, first Saturday slot on the 5th, but then the Futurity is on the closing weekend, 2 weeks later, on the 19th. So there's an extra 2 weeks for the boys as opposed to the Phillies. And it's significant because Astute, who looked equally terrific, winning on Saturday, winning the Babalu, the Desi Arnaz. This is a Spitestown filly for LNJ Foxwoods that was bred by Windstar. Is now 2 for 2, and when you pay $425,000 for a yearling, you that's what you're looking for. 2 for 2 and a stake winner. This is another horse that went from turf to dirt. This is 6.5 furlongs. The Desi Arnaz, but she looked terrific under Mike Smith. Favored Private Mission, the Baffert filly, 1 to 2 off of a debut win, going 6.5. This was the Into Mischief, $750,000 Bioma purchase. She was vying for the lead and just was no match for Astute. And in fact, off the board, ends up 4th. Queen's Gall for Sadler. And Sarah Gall Stable and Joanna Viana was 2nd in here, coming off of the Enochia try. Flashback filly. So 2 good 2-year-old stakes on the weekend at Del Mar. And there were a couple of other interesting results. Pipey on Friday. I don't know if did you see that Musawat? Musawat. An Equiano. It's a 6-year-old. That was a thriller. That was, if you didn't see that, I think it was the feature at Del Mar. Unbelievable. Terrific turf allowance with you know, basically half the field together at the wire. And I also noticed on Saturday, mid-card, the return, not that he's been away, but Kiss Today Goodbye, the nice Cruel Jack, Cairo Prince colt. Horse is all right. So, able to watch a fair amount of Del Mar this weekend. Last night, the late action, because I had the Roberts feed on, and Magical Thought, too, a maiden 2-year-old winner, Peter Miller, and Slam Dunk. And in fact, Slam Dunk had a couple of wins over the weekend. I saw Slam Dunk win. They won with a homebred, too, I saw at some point over the weekend. I'm not sure where that was. That could have been in Kentucky. I can't remember. Can't keep track of them all, folks. We'll head for the break. Head for the break, Case. And as we do that, we'll slip in a couple of these other stories. Of course, the sale continues. And happened to read Oppenheim yesterday afternoon. He churns through all the numbers, and the way he thought things were pretty encouraging through 6 days, and he kind of combined the Phasic sale too on Sunday night. But most notably, the weanlings are helping boost the numbers very much so. So, what do we got? think we've got three more days? Two more days?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Yeah, three today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. For Keeneland. And then people can take a break. Look toward December and more. The two passings, and I'm sure we're going to have a visit, at the very least, Dr. Allday, when it comes to talking about Dr. Jerry Johnson. And word came and circulated that he had passed last week, last Monday. And that leaves a unbelievable legacy in veterinary care, and not limited either to the thoroughbred racehorse. He was instrumental in the introduction of Lasix and was, you know, absolutely committed to the properties that it offers to protect the horse from EIPH. An innovator in a million different ways. I reached out to Dr. Allday, who I'm sure rubbed elbows. And if you haven't read the, I'd heard his name, but I didn't realize he was just the litany of things, including a major voice in helping to end soaring in walking horses. We talked about this several years ago. A horrible practice. And he fought against it for years. Also helped develop medications, surgery techniques. It's unbelievable. Dr. Jerry Johnson, 81. And, of course, Paul Hornick, the golden boy, Louisville legend. I mean, I how do you even put it into perspective? I mean, a gridiron great, and guy who loved to play the horses. We're going to get started. Kelly Breen's going to be by. Teresa Luniak, for her annual visit to celebrate Welder, back after this at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Don't miss a second of thrilling live racing from Aqueduct this fall on America's Day at the Races on Fox Sports. Watch Maggie Wolfendale, Andy Serling, and the entire All-Star cast bring you the best of fall racing live from Aqueduct. For full TV listings, visit NYRA.com.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Been beat up and battered around. Been sent up and I've been shot down. You're the best thing that I've ever found. Handle me with care. Reputation's changeable. Situation's tolerable. Baby, you're adorable. Handle me with care. I'm so tired of being lonely. I still have some love to give. Won't you show me that you really care?
We're back at the races.
Everybody.
And, you know, handling with care, a good lead-in, absolutely, to what Teresa Luniak has been able to do with Welder. 7 years old. Boy, 7-year-olds have been the order of the day, right, the last week or so. That's all we've talked about. Whitmore, and we had enough. Who was the other one? It's been a big couple of weeks for 7-year-old geldings. Teresa Luniak joins us for her annual visit to celebrate Welder. Teresa, congratulations. Yep.
Can you hear me?
There we go. There you are. Teresa, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Well, I have you every year when you win the Silver Goblin.
Yes, true.
It's you know, the horses like this, you've said it repeatedly, they just don't come along you know, all that often. He's now 25 for 37, and it's just a great story. Oklahoma bred, son of the visualizer, and he just continues to maintain a performance level that is amazing. It's a lot like what we talked about with Whitmore with Ron last week.
Yes. It's, you know, and I mean, honestly, I know I sound like I've said this before, but I think he's even better. I know that's hard to believe, but honestly, I think he's stronger this year than he was last year.
And you know, you get into a certain set of habit and practice with these kinds of horses, and in fact, he and Whitmore have crossed paths, right? I mean, at Oaklawn.
Yes, we last 2 years ago at Oaklawn. Yeah, yep, we ran against Whitmore, and I mean, honestly, I just have to say, I'm honored to even be included in the same sentence as Whitmore. That's such an outstanding horse that it's an honor to even be, you know, talked about in the same sentence as him.
I'll ask you some of the same things that Ron and I talked about last week. Keeping a horse like this and maintaining him, keeping him happy, you know, gelding at this age, you know, there's some arthritis and things that you deal with. I mean, talk about the keys to his longevity.
You know, I think the secret to Welder's longevity and success is that I don't run the wheels off him. I mean, I run him, I pick my races, and I try to be smart about my entering with him, and if I feel like the horse isn't 110, then we don't run.
Nice. And that actually, that's reflected pretty clearly from last year to this. You know, and of course, this year was such a goofy year anyway. And
it was.
You know, different, you know, tracks of the season kind of moved around. But 4 starts this year and, you know, from 9 last year.
Right.
What's,
you know, at the beginning of the year at Claremore, I just struggled with weather. It seemed like Welder got on the same schedule as every storm that wanted to come through Oklahoma. It never seemed to work out for me right at the beginning of Claremore. And I just didn't feel like I had him 100%. And I thought, you know, I'm just not going to run him if I don't think that he's 100% ready. And I didn't. So, you know, that took one of the starts away. So.
And then kind of walk through a little bit into Friday night.
You know, I knew he was ready when we galloped the day before the race at the farm. And, you know, Welder is kind of like, you've probably heard people say, he kind of acts like an old pony horse. You know, he just kind of goes out there and he'll jog a little bit, and then he'll kind of colt lope a little bit, and, you know, he'll gallop. And he's just always kind of real relaxed and very quiet going to the racetrack. And Thursday morning, he was up and his head was all bowed and he was kind of snorty, and I thought, oh yeah, he's ready. He knows what's coming. So he kind of transforms a little bit, you know when he's ready, because he kind of gets on his toes, and you know, he's a little more for Shad to handle. Shad got back, I met him at the track and walked him back up to the barn, and he said, oh boy, I'm sure glad that's over.
I love it. You look at this record, and you know there's been moments where he's kind of run races that put him right on that edge, and you obviously were motivated to bring him to Oaklawn and try the try the hot springs, and you ended up third at Whitmore that day.
Right.
I did see where you told Mary Rampolini that. You're kind of unsure about what to do. I mean,
right? You kind of think Wilder loves Oklahoma and he's so strong here in Oklahoma. Do you mess with that? He's given us everything he can. It's kind of like we said before, he's not the greatest shipper. He doesn't like to be away from home. He thrives at the farm, and you wonder, is it worth it? I don't know. It's a good question.
What's your schedule look like here as Remington after Remington wraps?
We usually take a little bit of a break until Claremore, and our dilemma is in our farm is there's really no racetracks around to get published works for that time, because Will Rogers is closed and then Remington closes, the end of December. For about 45 days, we're without a track. So to go get a time work, it would require me to haul to Oaklawn, would actually be the closest place.
Wow.
Yeah, so you can see how it kind of, it's a little crippling to, have that little bit of time. That's why I always struggle to get Wilder ready for an early race at Oaklawn, because I just don't have the, I just don't have the facilities.
Have you looked at, Sam Houston wouldn't.
It's about 9 hours for me.
Yeah, it's a schlep. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, I have hauled Wilder to Oaklawn before and got works on him. I've done that, and if that's what we have to do, that's what we'll do. It's a lot of time for me to be away from the farm, and I have other horses there to train, and we just kind of play it by ear, I guess.
Take us back a little bit, because I'm not even going to remember myself some of the origins with him.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Some of the what? I'm sorry.
The origin, the backstory with...
Oh. Well, everybody knows we bought him from Mighty Acres and bought him as a yearling. And, he started his career at Remington as a two-year-old. He ran twice. He ran a second and then went down there and won. And then that's kind of when we knew, we might have something, pretty special here. This is a pretty neat horse. And then it just kind of flourished from there. His two favorite tracks are Will Rogers and Remington, and he just shines at those two places. And I guess that just comes from being an Okie bred.
That doesn't hurt. But he's fared fine. He's fared well in open company. He's got plenty of open
Absolutely.
Company wins.
Yeah, I said to Kelly had asked me, and Rich Linehan had asked me, what was your favorite race? And it really was the David Vance, not this year. We ran in the sprint this year. I chose to run in the sprint because of the purse. And but the David Vance last year was just so cool. It was just, all those horses come in from all over to run. And, here's our little gray Okie bred. And he goes on to win. And it was a very, very special win for us.
Like I mentioned, 25 wins and 37 starts. It's
yeah.
just an
yeah,
unbelievable
crazy.
Record. And,
you.
And even when he's been off the board, that allowance race at the end of last year,
That race just didn't play out to Wilder's way. Wilder loves to get out in the open and run. That's when he does most of his running. He loves to get out and be in front, be in the open and run. And, he kind of got pinned down on the rail that night and kind of got in a bad spot. And that's what happens in horse racing.
Sure. Absolutely. Danny Cabrera has been riding him, what, about two years?
It's been three, I think.
Three. That's, all right.
Yes. Yeah. He's rode him for, you know, for the past 2 years. Yeah. And I will say, Wilder absolutely adores David. I mean, he gets on Wilder's back and you can just, you know, you just see the horse. He just takes a deep breath and he relaxes and he really has a really strong relationship with David.
Now, and obviously he's won with pretty much everybody when going back further, but, you know, it's fun for jocks to get associated with, you know, with a horse like this. And the earnings over seven figures, $1.1 million and counting.
It's a lot. I mean, to an Oakey bred, I mean, that's a lot.
Sure.
You know, we've made that million what people say, you know, the hard way. You know, we've done it in these 50, 60, you know, mostly, you know, the smaller overnight stakes and you know, just kind of pecked away at it. And that was our major goal with this horse. Like, we wanted to reach the $1 million. That was our major, major goal. And now, you know, now that we've made that, the rest is, like I said, the rest is gravy. You know, this is just, now we're having fun.
Well, I did see where you told Mary Rampolini that, you know, as wonderful as it is, it's also hard when, you know, a horse like this comes along and, you know, eventually you'll call it quits, but,
it's tough
to envision, you know, getting another horse like this. That's a little bit of the back of your mind. You want this to last as long as possible.
Sure. And I've said, you know, I'll only run the horse as long as he tells me he wants to run. I mean, as soon as I get any kind of indication that he doesn't want to do it anymore, you know, he'll live out his life at Raymax in a nice pasture with grass and, you know, and sunshine and, you know, never have to worry about anything. He doesn't owe us anything. The horse has done everything we've ever asked of him. So, you know, he deserves to, when he wants to be done, he sure can be done.
Yeah, I couldn't resist the opportunity to, you know, to talk and celebrate, you know, the wins with him. And we talked the same time last year. Yeah, I do notice one thing that's kind of jumps out at me. This 6.5 distance. You know, sprinters
are, I agree, it's
one of those things that it's not, you know, sprint distances, six and a half, seven, they're each a little unique, and he's now 4 for 4 at 6.5.
You know, that I had someone say something the other day. They were like, well, aren't you a little worried, you know, that you know, 6.5? And I said, no, actually, Wilder's got his best number running 6.5.
Yes.
I mean, he's really rolling at 6 furlongs. Like, that, he's really rolling. Like, you know, the race the other night, you know, I mean, how many horses go 22 and 44 and then they're in 109? I mean, that's fast.
No, exactly. And you know, one thing too with him, you know, you look at the way he's won. I mean, if he has to get the lead, or if the lead is handed to him early, he's comfortable enough. But
sure.
You know, but typically he, like you're saying, he gets, you know, he kind of works his way into stride. Not that he breaks slow at all, but you know, he then starts to really motor, and that's
right.
Why that 6.5 seems to really work. And has he run at 7? He's run at 7.
I don't think he did. I think he ran second at 7 furlongs. And, you know, the secret to the whole thing with Wilder is David has taught that horse how to relax. You know, it used to be he just wanted to blast out to the lead and, you know, he didn't really want to race. And I don't know what David's done. I mean, that's why he's the rider that he is, but he's got that horse to just kind of relax and, you know, get out there, and he doesn't have to be, you know, way out in front. He can kind of eyeball that other horse and you know, and then go ahead and pull away. But he's, you know, that's, I attribute that to David. I really do.
Nice. Nice. Well, it's one of those fun stories. Everybody last week was bemoaning the retirements of some of the three-year-olds, most notably Authentic. There's horses like this. There's a horse like this out there, and Whitmore for people to, you know, to root for and look forward to seeing when, you know, when we can go back to the racetrack on a regular basis. And
And like I said, this horse is in perfect form right now. I mean, he looks great. He's eating great. His hair is great. I mean, his weight's great. I mean, he's training like, you know, no other. I mean, I don't think the 7-year-old deal has even crossed his mind. I don't think he even cares. That, you know, I just don't. I think he is better than ever. I really do.
I love it. Well, how about some things in the pipeline? Talk about some of your other horses.
You know,
you've had a good meet.
We went to Keeneland this year, and we bought the best set of yearlings that we've ever bought. I'm so excited about our string. You know, we bought an Empire Maker filly and a Lord Nelson filly and a couple exaggerators. And we really upped our game, and I'm so excited about that string of horses. We should have a very, very nice set of 2-year-olds for next year.
Very nice. You've also got kind of a mix too. You've got the Iowa. Right?
Yeah. You know that Iowa bred filly. Boy, that's a classy, classy horse. Tries every single time. I mean, just, you know, what a neat horse. I never got the opportunity to run her on the grass this year, which is where she belongs. I mean, she's, you know, out of the full sibling to Kip DeVille, and she's by Summerfront. You know, she should be on the grass. Just never could seem to make it happen because I was, you know, running the Iowa money was so good that it was hard to not go up to Iowa to run her. But, you know, next year I plan on, you know, trying to get her to some grass. And she, you know, she's kind of the opposite of Wilder. She hauls like a dream. She settles in immediately. She's, you know, she just, nothing phases her. She's just, that's a very, very neat filly.
Her name's Caddy DeVille, C-A-D-I.
Caddy DeVille.
Caddy DeVille.
And she is class. I mean, from the word go. What a neat, neat filly. We'll have a lot of fun with her.
Well, and I see that $25,000 as a Keeneland yearling, and that looks like money well spent.
Absolutely. We bought her. We were actually driving home from the sale from Keeneland, and Randy Blair from Mighty Acres called me, and he said, hey, you know, there's a filly in the sale today that, you know, you really should take a look at. And so I sent my son over there. He was at Keeneland. I sent him over to take a peek at him and Alex, and they went and looked at her, and they were like, oh yeah, she's really nice. So, you know, we bought her while we were driving down the road. We were on our way home. So it was
That's just funny.
By date that we got her. Yeah. Yeah, it was great.
Wow. And Zach Madden.
He's really neat. And, you know, we have Wilder's half-brother. He'll start here at Remington very shortly.
What's his name?
So his name is Soldador Dose. And he's a race day colt by the same mom as Wilder, a big, big, beautiful bay gelding. I plan on having a start in him just in the next couple weeks. So he should be fun to watch.
Excellent. Soldador Dose.
And David will be on him, too, so that should help.
Well, Teresa, you're having a nice, you know, welder helps as the engine on the train, but you've been having a nice meet anyway at Remington.
I am. I'm actually right now. I'm driving to Remington to go run today. I have two in today, so that's where I'm headed right now. We have day racing in Remington Monday and Tuesday this week, so a little bit of a break for me. It's so nice to be going during the day.
Well, you've got a couple of claiming opportunities in the 5th and the 7th. The audience loves to find some opinions. Cruisin' Comet in the 5th, Gray Sky Mesa in the 7th.
Yeah. You know, Gray Sky Mesa, that's a good spot for her. I kind of over-entered her last time. That's shame on the trainer. That wasn't fair of her, and I think this time she's right where she belongs. She's training great. And you know, the Comet horse, he's I was so surprised last time because he kind of came off the pace. That's not usually his style, but of course David was on him, and I think he'll be really strong today. We had kind of struggled getting a non-3 long race to go, and now, you know, luckily we've gotten two of them to go. So I think that he could be a strong contender today.
Nice. Well, Remington kicks off at 1 o'clock Eastern, noon Central, and
yep.
got a nice 10 race card today. And
yeah.
I'm glad.
And it's day racing. Yay!
Well, and you can. I don't know if Moquette is going to be there, but he's got some horses in. And
Nothing.
Yeah, he does. He's got at least one in. I just see on the. He's got in the 10th. Let's see let's see if you guys cross paths elsewhere. Now it's all the usual suspects.
Sure, we will.
Well, I couldn't resist the opportunity to pair up the wonderful 7-year-olds Moquette with Whitmore last week and Teresa Luniak with the amazing Welder this week.
Well, we appreciate all the support, and you know, he's Oklahoma's horse. They just absolutely love him down here, and I just think that's so great for Oklahoma racing.
No doubt, and Remington does a tremendous job. Teresa,
they have.
Great to talk. Best wishes for the holiday season and the rest
Thank
of
you.
The year, and we'll look
Thank
forward
you.
To hopefully to seeing him at Oaklawn over the winter.
Okay, we'll probably be there.
I love it.
All right, thank you.
Not at all. Teresa Luniak, everybody, and the amazing Welder. You want horses to root for that are going to stay on the racetrack. There you go. Welder, 7-year-old son of the Visualizer, and you even got a couple others here. Caddy DeVille, and as she mentioned, out of Kip DeVille's sister, and then the brother of Welder, Soldador Dos. All right, so write them all down. Keep track. We're looking for a visit from Kelly. We'll see if he's out on the pony a lot, so we'll see if Kelly's ready for us. If not, we'll get him later in the morning. And actually, there was something Teresa said that triggered something I wanted to mention. Now I got to go figure out what it was. A couple of, there we go. A couple of notes regarding some cancellations and some tabling of racing. That includes Golden Gate and COVID issues there. And, you know, the things have been very steady, actually, in and around San Francisco, but obviously the whole country dealing with this, you know, just not even a, can't even call it a resurgence. It's just a pervasive spread of COVID, and so backstretch communities having to be really alert, and I'm sure that. To some degree, there's been, you know, we're getting maybe a little relaxed. I don't know. But Golden Gate with a handful of positives. And so they're through Friday at least, no racing. And Zia Park, same thing. And Zia had just completed their state card on Wednesday. I'll actually get to that. I've got, I had that on the corner of the desk. So, there actually today was more positive news regarding vaccines. There was another really hopeful study release that, meanwhile, we still got to wait, and everybody's got to stay, vigilant and maintain all the precautions because it's been obviously it's been remarkable how much we've been able to accomplish as an industry and keeping things going. Since we discussed the Silver Goblin win with Welder. He won by 5. at 1-9. And the other two stakes on Friday night, we'll slip those in. I don't know if you saw the disqualification in the slideshow. There was a three stakes sequence Friday night. And Twilight Curfew essentially took a left turn out of the gate with Cabrera. And this was Ronnie Cravens with the twirling candy. And these were two-year-olds in the slideshow, two-year-old fillies. And Twilight Curfew takes this right turn and completely saws off the two horse, Boyd Caster's Green-Eyed Bell, and also hampers the three. Simultaneously, if you watch the head-on, there were some other things going on outside, too. The five and the six, the five kind of broke inward, actually, and that even complicated things further. And so the two, three, four, and five, they sort of truncated. It was like an accordion. And as soon as they crossed the wire, the inquiry light went up. And good for the Stews here, because, trouble at the start is just as impactful as trouble late in the race. I mean, we say this all the time. And as a result, the longest shot on the board, Courtly, gets put up for Lynn Cleberat, a Pollard's Vision filly, 29-1. And Twilight Curfew was placed last, actually. Notably, it had to be placed last because the two horse that Lane Luzzi was aboard, Gotta See Red, that was the horse most adversely affected. That was the Boyd Caster. So you really had no choice. She never lifted a hoof. I mean, she basically was mired at the back, and that was it. So they put Twilight Curfew behind her. So Cleberat gets put up, and that's actually a an Allen Poindexter homebred. Pollard's Vision out of a Noble Causeway mare, Lady Noble. The other stake was the McNeil and number one dude, an American Lion. One off by half a dozen. This was Carl Craddock for Terry Westheimer, homebred of Westheimer's, and out of a Macho Uno mare. Ebony Uno, number one dude, 3-5 here, and is now 3-3. Broke the maiden, won the Oklahoma Classic Juvenile, and now wins the McNeil. And so you would think Springboard Mile, if you want to face open, right? This is a pretty nice little two-year-old, 60s buyers, 65, 63, and then a 69 in this race on Friday night. So that was the Remington action. While we're doing some regional, got a couple of minutes till the top of the break and top of the hour and the break. And how about the two? We'll stay on the two-year-old front. And there were those two races I told you about at Laurel. And always pleased to talk about successes for the Haskell sisters. And here it was on Saturday in the James F. Lewis, the $100,000 feature for the boys, and Hope Jones and Isabel de Tomaso. We just talked about Isabel's late husband last week. And the sisters with Cal Lynch. And here's Faker, the Peshamville mayor, producing a Golden Sense colt, No Sense, which is cute, and wasn't favored. In fact, the the wagering was really compact. 3-1, 7-2, 4-1, and then two horses at 9-2. Five horses within a buck and a half of each other. And No Sense went off at 440, paid 1080 with Trevor McCarthy. Jersey Bred, 109. Stop the clock. Very nice. And an 81 buyer for No Sense. And when it came to the girls' race, it was the Street Magician filly bred by the Bowmans. Tom and Brooke Bowman. Doctor, doctor. The Maryland bred Street Loot with the X-Man, Xavier Perez. This for Jerry Robb, Lucky 7. Nice. One clear and was just favored over Prodigy Doll. That was Bernie Houghton sending out that one. 150 to 180. So $5 winner for Perez and Jerry Robb. Street Loot. Street Loot with a 72 buyer in there. And since we're doing regional, we'll also let me also get in the, you know, they were canceled yesterday at Woodbine. But on Saturday, Jilly Marie with Steve Bond wins the South Ocean. These are more two-year-olds. Two-year-old fillies, a Dynamic Sky out of a Cape Canaveral mare. Katerina Vasileva sending out this one for owner Kevin Drew. Jilly Marie won well, paid $12.40 in the South Ocean. So there you go. There's some of the regional. Got to get to the Gulfstream action, Gulfstream West, Calder, and of course the rest of the New York. I haven't talked about the New York States stakes other than mentioning Therapist's win, but the Winter Memories and the Key Sense yesterday, the Notebook. That was good. The Notebook and the Artie Schiller. We'll talk about those with Mig when he joins us. I guess, you know, we got exactly a minute. So I'll quickly run down what happened at Gulfstream yesterday. How about Saturday, Queen Anne. This was the, you know, Sunshine Millions preview sequence. Queen Anne for Tamara Levy with a huge upset. Five-horse field, longest shot on the board, 28-1, pays $57.60 with Angel Arroyo. We love Angel. Looking forward to him riding Claude Ray. Quinane, an Algorithms gelding for Levy. And owners IAB Stables, Walter Freilich, beats Noble Drama. Hal Queen and David Fox. And as always, with these big upsets, wire to wire, invariant, but you needed to be on or near the lead at GPW. David Carlos sent out Shady Summer. This was in the Juvenile Philly Sprint. Two-year-old, Even Money, One Easy under Jaramillo for Shady Boys Stable. Legal Deal with Paco, second choice, 5-2. Kozan Gelding wins the sprint preview. David Carlos and owners Michelle Rosa and Larry Sargent. Poppy's Pride won the juvenile sprint for the two-year-olds, wire-to-wire. Rios for Michael Yates and Stone Edge paid $10. And Paco also a winner, wire-to-wire in the distaff. Tis Possible Deer for Peter Walder in Paradise Farms. This a prospective mare. And there was actually a maiden race, too, that closed it out. 6-5 winner, Moonlight Strike. And, of course, they were off the turf, too, out at Miami Gardens, Sonata Stables. Safi Joseph, Moonlight Strike, under Zayas, and that maiden to close it out. So that was the action at GPW on Saturday. Let's take the break. Mig's coming up. We'll try to get Kelly Breen a little bit later. Eric Hallstrom's going to join us. It is closing week at Indiana. It's been one of the great successes of 2020 with so many different, you know, difficulties to deal with. Indiana has been spectacular. They've just been an amazing meet. So we'll talk to Eric about it later on. Rich Migliori, though, is going to join us next. Got plenty to talk about with Mig. Back after this at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Don't miss a second of thrilling live racing from Aqueduct this fall on America's Day at the Races on Fox Sports. Watch Maggie Wolfendale, Andy Serling, and the entire all-star cast bring you the best of fall racing live from Aqueduct. For full TV listings, visit NYRA.com.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.